help us give a warm welcome to Tammy from Richmond. About 5 minutes for us.
I cheated.
Okay, well, I'll let you run yours.
Thank you so much. My name is Timmy, and I am alcoholic.
Hi, Timmy.
Thank you for having me here tonight. My sobriety date is January 25th, 1999. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. My home group is Wet Birds in Richmond. If you ever get loose there on Friday night, come by. We're a happy group, and we'd love to have you. I'm here to share what it was like, what it's like now, and how it all came about. I'm hoping that somewhere in the room, there's somebody that needs to hear this message. I'm not sure that I need to share it because it scares me, but at the same time, there's something out there, a reason that I'm here tonight. I was born in Arkansas. My father was a full-blown alcoholic, and my mother was already in the great depths of becoming an Al-Anoner. I called her the black belt Al-Anon person because she was in true belief that if the square peg didn't fit the round hole, you beat it in. And passed some of those traits on to me. But my life and my family was full of alcohol. I think there's 7 siblings on my mother's side and 8 siblings on my father. And between the two of them, there's only 3 people that alcohol did not involve in their life or their death. So to drink was just a matter of time. I didn't drink through high school or any of those things because my mother had taught me that only weak people drink. All you have to do is quit moving the elbow with a drink at the end of it. Only gutless, sorry people drink. I heard that over and over and over. Now, this is a woman that has had... And when I tell you that I know the results of alcohol, let me explain the details of that. On my mother's side, my uncle Jim killed himself after killing his girlfriend. Both were alcoholics. My uncle Del Marie killed his wife, went next door, called the police, called an ambulance, went back and killed himself. Both alcoholics. My uncle Bug was killed in a car wreck where they were going down to see one of his friends that was in jail for DWI. The friend's girlfriend was driving, and she was drunk, and he was in the back seat drunk. He let her drive because she was the least drunk. She sent her a telephone pole, and he was killed. That's just one side of my family. As a young child, I was accustomed to alcohol. Alcohol brought fights, and alcohol brought good times. You know, we look good. You know, on the outside, the family looked good. We had the big family gatherings. Me and you talk about Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas dinners. They look good. But I didn't know that the police didn't come to your house on the 4th of July and Christmas. I didn't know that the police didn't know you by name. When I was about 6, I knew how to call the police from the phone of the neighbors next door, but I did not know how to write my name. So this is the family. This is, you know, I can remember that probably when I was about 17, I was dating this young man, and I remember my mother saying, when he tells them who your family is, he'll never be back. So alcohol was normal. My grandmother was, you know, and with the alcohol comes the young mother. My mom had me when she was really young, so I got passed off a lot to whichever one of her sisters that would help. You know, I didn't realize till lately that, you know, I spent a lot of time with my grandmother. Well, the reason is Mama kept going home with the baby, which was me. But, you know, these other people were helping raising me. And I can remember being at the aunt's house. It was pretty cool because they didn't fight as much. But I can remember going to my grandmother's house one time, and it was getting close to Christmas. And the 2 or 3 of the older boys had come in. And my grandmother was Indian. And she said there was these jars all around the wall. on one side and on the other stacked. And it was clear stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, you know, Granny, what is that? And she'd say, fire, water. Mm-hmm. And it'll bring the devil out in you. Mm-hmm. I didn't know for years and years what moonshine was. But I knew that, bad things were going to happen. Holidays were coming. That was normal at our house. And I didn't understand it. Out of all these people, my mother didn't drink. Not one drop, ever. Never. And so they called her Miss Astor. You know, she was better than others, or made them feel that she was better than others. And she would try to cover up everything that was going on, and I didn't understand that. You know, I didn't understand why we moved so often. You know, there was always a story that I didn't know. I never knew what was going on. But about, I was 17, I was in the same school for more than 4 years, and that was a miracle. And I married the first person that asked me. Mm-hmm. But I didn't drink. I did not drink. I felt less than. It didn't matter what I did, I didn't feel good enough. On the outside, you know, we had the nice homes, we had nice clothes, we had all the nice things in life that other children would say, wow. But inside, I was nobody. And I couldn't understand what was going on. I did marry the very first person that came along and said, you want to get married? I said, sure. And as soon as I moved out, and as soon as I had my own place, and things didn't suit me, truth is, he went to work working days, nights, and I stayed up all day. So I thought, I don't like this because he's gone and I'm scared and I don't have anybody to play with. So I had seen the examples in my life that if you're unhappy, you drink. I was 19 years old before I took my first drink. But man, when I did it, I had found the secret. You know, the very first night, I got drunk and I blacked out the very first night. But when I woke up, I was in good places. I was with popular people doing popular things, and everybody knew who I was. I thought, this is wonderful. Only problem is, I drank every day from then on. Because I really liked it, and I thought that's the only way that I was going to get to have good friends and good fun and do fun things. So I drank every day. The husband worked it and did things that I didn't like. I just kept on drinking. I didn't care. I no longer cared about a husband. I no longer cared about anything. Only problem is I got sick. If you don't eat and all you do is drink, it causes stomach problems, you know, real bad. So I ended up pretty sick and I went to the doctor and they said, well, you have some bleeding ulcers. I said, okay. Do you drink? No, just a little, every once in a while. Really? Well, we suggest that you eat milk and crackers for 6 weeks, and if this doesn't go away, then we'll look at doing some surgery and fixing the ulcers. And I'm already playing in my head how I can get around this. Because as an alcoholic, I never hear what you say. I've already started to strategize how to get around you. Mm-hmm. How to do it my way. How to get my fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, I whip this. And he said, oh, by the way, you're pregnant. Ew. Game over. Because I knew from listening to my family, having children was the end of the world. You had to sacrifice your entire life for your children. So I couldn't drink. Because I was pregnant, I laid the bottle down. And I went many years without touching it again. But I could not touch it under any circumstance. There was, you know, someone said, y'all want to have a few drinks? Mm-hmm. Was I sober? No, I was dry. Mm-hmm. I can remember sitting in chairs and actually counting how many drinks it took you to finish a glass. Mm-hmm. I know at one party I counted how many people spilled their drinks. What a waste. You know, was I sober? No, not at all. I just was not participating in my disease. My thoughts were the same. My actions were the same. My behaviors of the outcome went on. I had that baby, and as soon as that baby was 6 weeks old, I filed for divorce and decided to get out. And again, I married the very next person who asked me. But see, this time I did something really good. If you come from this lousy bunch of drunks and these evil people that beat each other up and wreck cars and kill people, how do you get on the other side of the law? You marry it. You know, I found a state trooper that needed a wife, and he asked, and I married him. That baby was 5 months old. And not only was he a police officer, which made me good all of a sudden, or I thought. And I thought, you know, all those bad people from my family couldn't come around because they'd be scared of the cop. And I did get a few messages from the family saying, you talk, you're in trouble. I never could remember what I was supposed to talk about, but that's okay. You know, I don't think anybody was interested, you know. And so being with the state trooper for a while, I was okay. I was happy. Had a baby, had another baby. Everything's good. And the only problem is this man does not drink at all. Anybody know a cop that doesn't drink? How do you do a job like that and not drink? I said, boy, you've kind of screwed up on this one, you know, because he don't even drink a beer. And he doesn't like people who drink. I was working at the police department when I met him. And so I, on occasion, would be qualified to go and ride with him. And when his parents would come visit, I would go ride with him on patrol. And I can remember working a really bad wreck. And the young man was drunk. And it killed the young man. And I can remember being so upset when I was with him. I said, you know, doesn't that bother you? You know, this is somebody's son. This is somebody's daughter. A daughter's parent. I mean, this is somebody loved. And he said, it's a drunk. With them dead, they're off the highway. They don't kill my children or your children. So needless to say, there was no drinking at home. So I found, as the call came more and more, I thought, I've got to find a way to drink. So I found a job that you're gone Monday through Friday out of state. Every week, and you earn good money, so it's a win-win. So I took the position where I traveled Monday through Friday. I was always gone. I came home only on the weekends, and I could drink just like I wanted to. And I worked for a company that didn't care whether my lunch and supper was liquid or not. My company paid for cabs, everything. My grandmother always said, if you're going to mess up your nest, don't do it in your front yard. Well, I don't go to some states anymore, but there's a reason. Wasn't in my front yard. And that's how the years of drinking went on. And I loved it. I had the perfect setup. I could come home and pretend to be the Sunday school teacher, the Boy Scout leader, all those things. Monday, from Friday, but come Monday, I was out of there. That's as long as I could take it. And no one knew a drink. When I was at home, people wanted to go party. They'd say, take Tammy, she can be our designated driver. And I sat there and I counted the drinks. I'm thinking, these folks, gosh, I'd just be glad when Sunday night comes and I can leave early. You know, that's the life I lived. You know, if I had put half of the effort into my life of being sober that I put into being drunk, my husband wouldn't need to work anymore. Because I spent all my time hiding and covering And lies? Oh, my dear God, the lies. I told so many lies that I couldn't remember them anymore, and I was getting to a point I couldn't remember. As time passed, the children grew up. You know, suddenly I had teenagers, and there was things going on at home, and I wasn't real happy about the way parenting was going on when I wasn't there. And I was told, well, if you're not here, then what's it matter? So I realized I had drank away a lot of time that I couldn't get back. And I felt so hollow. You know, I kept thinking I could drink enough to fill the hole inside of me. Because no matter what I did, I felt like I was different than everybody else. I felt like you knew something I didn't know. You got a book I didn't get to read. And I kept on drinking. And it wasn't that I wanted to die, but I just wanted this life to get over soon. Because this wasn't what, you know, I couldn't make this one okay. I was just trying to make it through time for my children to grow up. You know, and there I was with the children. When they're in teenage years, they're trying to drink and dope and do all those bad, bad things. And I'm coming unglued on them. And just telling them, you can't do this, da, 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 and looking in the mirror the next morning going, who are you? You are a hypocrite, beyond hypocrite. You ain't even, and you don't even have guts enough to drink around your family. And I would be sitting with people in a room and them talking about their college years, how they had fun. I didn't have that. I didn't have guts enough to drink in front of nobody. Because I knew that if I drank, that made me just like the rest of my family. And I couldn't do it. I came to a point that the marriage itself, you know, it wasn't a marriage anymore because I was living a lie. The kids were first year in college. The oldest one was in college. The other one was 15 years old, and Mama was never there. But I sure wanted to tell everybody else how to take care of my life. You know, you can't do this. Our children can't do that. Well, it wasn't there, so why was I telling people what to do? Well, I have to work. And my husband said, you haven't had to work in years. This is your choice. Mm. You're right. You know, that lie didn't fly anymore. Because I didn't have to. But I had made it fit for me, it worked for me, and I did not want to come home. The company that I worked for said I had something like 7 months of vacation time. I've been there 11 years. I wouldn't take a vacation. They said, you know, you're covering 5 states. It's a lot of work. You need to take some time off. And I'm like, I don't want to. Well, you really do need to take some time down and recharge. And I'm like, no. They said, well, we're going to tell you you need to take time off. You need to take 3 weeks off. That meant 3 weeks of no drinking. My world came crashing down. I can remember thinking, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can do 3 days. At the most, I can do 3 days. I can't do 3 weeks. I made it about a week and a half. The husband said, I want to let you know that I'm going to put in for my retirement, and I'm going to retire and go everywhere you do. And I said, I want a divorce. Mm. Simple solution. He couldn't go where I go. You know, everything was part of the game. And for him to want to go with me and be with, this is my game. You're not interfering with my drinking. And as much as I love my children, I didn't want anybody interfering with my drinking. And that day I got up, I got my car, and this is, again, I have to tell you that, you know, I don't know about y'all before you actually came into the program, if you'd looked a big book, but my dad was a recovering alcoholic. So I'd been to meetings, and I had heard this no major changes the first year. I'd heard all these little rules, and I can remember thinking, no major changes for a year. Well, I need to. And I went and I stopped at the attorney's office and filed for a divorce that morning before I went to the first AA meeting. Have y'all ever looked at those rules and it says you're going to do this, this, and this? And you have that fear of, oh, I'll never do that. I'll never do that. Well, I can remember thinking, okay, that step that tells you got to tell someone your deepest, darkest secrets. I tell you how my alcoholic mind thinks. If you go to the hospital and you go to the intensive care portion where people are almost dead, tell them all your deepest, darkest sins and sit there and wait for them to die. Now, folks, that's the way I think. If that should scare you, because that's the way I thought it through. So the morning that I decided I wanted a divorce after, I think it was 20 years at that time, I go by and file for the divorce on the way, but I know that I've got to get sober. Because I couldn't make it without alcohol. I can't make it with it, and I can't make it without it. Mm-hmm. And this time off proved to me I couldn't do it. And I was scared. But I also knew I needed to get a new husband, too. You know, things weren't going too well at this point. I needed a change. So I went, and I talked to the attorney and called him and said, hey, I need a divorce. I said, okay. And then I went to my first meeting. Now, I went to an Al-Anon meeting. When I call my father, who's an alcoholic, he says, you need to go to Al-Anon. Well, I went to two meetings that morning with an Al-Anon lady that he sent to my room. And that lady told me I was in the wrong room and said, let me take you where I think you might be more. And yeah. I get in there and I hear my truths. I hear my stories. I hear people that think like I am. You know, when I tell you how I think, you laugh because you understand. You don't jump up and go, oh my God, she's nuts. I knew all of a sudden I was in the right room. I was with the right people because they think as I think. And I got a sponsor, and I don't know that I really thought I was going to get sober. I thought I'd just hide for a while and see what happens, you know. And they weren't going to look for the cop's wife in the AA meetings. Or I didn't think they would. Especially since I didn't know I drank. So I moved to another state. And I went to meetings and I got a sponsor. And my sponsor was, you know, we say that we have suggestions. That lady never suggested anything in her life. She said, you do that or you're going to drink. You do this. And you know, it probably was exactly what I needed. But she was an alcohol and drug counselor for the state of Oklahoma. And she could read right through my stuff. You know, when I told the lies or when I made up the stories or when I had myself paged or whatever. She was like, she already knew what I was doing. And I can remember thinking, I'll just hide here till the heat blows over. And then I'll go back out and I'll be able to drink again. You know, I just need a break. And I realized that I had been sober 30 days, and I didn't really know how that happened. And she told me, you know, I'm not going to ask anything else from you. You're not very willing in lots of ways, so just suit up and show up. She'd say, bring your bottom and the mind will follow. And, you know, I did. That's all I could give her. And after 30 days of having some, you know, realized I hadn't drank at all. I was crazy. There was no doubt about it. I was crazy. And, you know, I thought if I didn't drink, everything would be wonderful. I didn't know that you wouldn't sleep. You seemed like you caught every bug out there. You know, my sponsor said, no, you're not sicker than normal. You just know it now. You know, I got sick. I had to learn to eat because liquid was my formula for all vitamins and nutrients. All of a sudden, this wasn't very easy, but I realized it had been 30 days and I hadn't drank. And I can remember thinking that if you made it this far at just suiting up and showing up, what if you actually followed some of the rules? What if you actually listened? Yeah, that would work for me. But I did continue to go, and I continued to do the few simple things. And, you know, I had to take it off in little chunks. You know, I'd like to tell you, well, I read the big book, and it all fit. And, no, you know, baby steps. Lots and lots of baby steps. You know, I can remember arguing with my sponsor, which I wouldn't ever think anybody would argue with me and that I sponsored. They wouldn't dare. They're glad to be there. No, I wasn't glad to be there. I was miserable. And I was miserable for quite a while. You know, but I had drank for a long time, and she said, you're not going to get well overnight. But, you know, I listened. She said, let's break it down into simple stuff. You know, don't drink and go to meetings. That's what I want you to do. I did that. She said, okay, I want you to do the five basics. I want you to, when you get out of bed in the morning, I want you to get on your knees and ask higher power to keep you sober today. I want you to read some type of information, AA approved, to put good stuff in your brain. She said, I want you to go to a meeting. I want you to talk to another alcoholic. And then I want you to get on your knees before bed and thank your higher power for keeping you sober. Can you do those five things? I can try. And you know, time started stacking up. More and more days became. And you know, after a little while, I'll never forget, I heard the strangest noise. And I can remember these noises, and I look around. It was my laughter. Because folks, when I first came in the rooms, Alcoholic Anonymous, there wasn't nothing funny to me. And I was pretty sure if you had my life, you wouldn't be laughing either. You know, I couldn't look the person in the mirror in the face. I knew she was nothing but lies. And I had no idea who she was either. But I stuck with the sponsor. I did the things that the sponsor asked me to do that were very simple. She told me I need to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I said, clearly you don't know how important I am. I have a job. And I loved it when they said, step one, you're powerless over alcohol and your life is unmanageable. I'll not forget looking at her saying, I manage 288 people every day. Don't tell me, she said, you missed the whole meeting, hon. Your life isn't manageable. It isn't talking about your skills or your professional life. It's talking about you as an individual. Well, how dare you say that? Well, let me tell you something. I realize now it's not normal for a person to only sleep 6 days a week. It's not normal for a person not to eat. I mean, all these things that was my regular life, that in my mind, my sick mind, I thought, well, it's just because I work harder than you do. If you tried, like, I thought I was special that I could only sleep 6 nights a week. Now my body tells me who the idiot was. But still, you know, at that time, my way of thinking that the way you lie to yourself is scary with this disease. When folks tell you you have a disease that tells you you don't have a disease, let that sink in. Cancer doesn't do that. The flu doesn't do that. You know, chickenpox doesn't do that. You have a disease that tells you you don't have a disease. Now, how dangerous is that? And I believed it. You know, if I tried harder, I worked harder. After being sober for a little bit, needless to say, my family doesn't have a whole lot of use for me. Thank heavens I have my own children. Those folks, most of them are dead. You know, alcohol has killed both sides of my family. and I'm trying with everything that's in my soul to prevent this disease from carrying on. I say my prayers, and I talk, and I listen, but I know I have no power over it, but I'm doing everything I can that I'm being taught to do. Today, I live a different life. You know, I've heard a friend share how I didn't know you could go bowling without drinking. I didn't know you could go on a boat without drinking. But today, we have a very active life. We have a very fun life, and I don't have to drink. You know, I've been through divorces in this sober life. I don't have to drink. I've been through deaths that really matter, and I don't have to drink. But I found out that by being sober, when I realized that this works, just let's say not drinking, just the not drinking part. When I found out that if I do these simple steps, I don't have to drink, I grew inside. When I found out by working these steps, I'm surrounded by people just like me who I truly love. And they're good folks. You know, I have a family today. I always have a place to go. I grew. And today, I can't imagine drinking. But I had to take it in baby steps. This program is all laid out for us. But if you're anything like me, the only way I have faith in anything is by experience. You know, just because you write on the blackboard, this stove is hot. I'm sorry, folks, I got to go touch it. I don't know about y'all, but I'm going to touch it once. And twice sometimes. Because of this, this is the only way I learn my ability. So all the things that's in the big book, I had to experience them. But by staying sober for a little while and realizing that things from here kept me sober, then I'm willing to try each one a little bit. And by doing that, I get the experience. And in this fellowship, you have leadership. You have people. You have your sponsor. You have your program. You have your friend. You have a support group that allows you to go as far as you want to go. And by the experiences you go through, you're building faith in the whole program. You know, I'm not alone anymore. I will never, ever be alone again, and I know that for certain. I know that any town I go to, that if I can find Bill W.'s meeting, I've got friends. I'm not alone. I find great humor in listening to other people's stories because I understand that, you know, what it's like to put your hand in the stove twice. I can remember a friend going to a meeting with me, and there was a speaker, and when the speaker would tell a story, we'd laugh. And then when the speaker would talk about the good things that happened, we'd almost cry. And the person next to us said, "Y'all are wired backwards." But we understand that. You know, we know what's funny to us is not always funny to somebody else. And I get that. But we have, you know, came from a bad past. I got the same chance everybody else does. What I know is that alcohol made me do some really dumb stuff. You know, I the other day I went to, back to Arkansas for a visit with my grandchildren. And when I worked, some of the bars and some of the states I went in, you had to sign in. And I had to make an amends when I was going in Arkansas the other day because I signed in as my best friend in every bar in Kansas. On my way driving to Arkansas the other day, I thought, oh my God, what if they'd filed for divorce and they checked them out to follow up and see what she'd been doing and they'd find she'd been in every bar in Kansas? I called her up and I said, "Patsy." She said, "I don't even drink." I said, "I didn't know that." But see, it didn't matter. It did. You know, my sick way of thinking is get what I want. I needed alcohol, and if I had to use you to get it, I did. If I had, you know, one of the things I wanted to have was my children, but I gave up them to be gone Monday through Friday. I only showed up on weekends. So what kind of mother is that? If they said they wanted something, I bought it. And I'd always tell my husband, don't choke on your food. I pay the bills. But I wasn't giving them what they wanted. I was giving them what I wanted. That was the right to drink, right to party. And I used everybody to get what I wanted. You know, and as I got sober, and they were telling me how I was going to do this big book, and I was like, oh, you just don't understand. I'm give out. I don't have the get to go. I'm tired. If I can't drink, I lose all my energy and I want to. And I said, yeah, but you've been sober for 3 months now. We want to do the work. We want you to do the work. Well, they used the wrong word, work. You know, that sounded too hard to me. But my sponsor set me down and said, let's do the little stuff. Let's take baby steps. And believe me, by doing, she said, the way you find serenity is to find yourself. I said, well, isn't there a book that just, isn't there something that Secrets to Life are just written? And she said, it doesn't get any better than a big book. The secrets to life are there. You got 12 simple rules. What more could you ask for? There's the secret. I'd say, well, I've got this problem. And she'd say, well, you know, the bigger the problem, the smaller the step. I'm like, what? These steps don't sound fun at all. She said, yes, but if you hurt enough, you'll become willing to work them. And I did. I became willing to work 12 steps. I became willing to do just about anything. Because the person, I didn't know the Tammy that I am. I didn't know who she was. And I sure didn't want to talk about what she'd done. And I got to the point that I was pretty ashamed of her. So we started working the steps. And by working the steps, I think of them as the 12 tools. Because steps means I have to do something hard. To me, it's like going upstairs is hard. So the 12 tools that are in this life's journey that you use every day is what you can use to find all solutions. If you think about it, well, which tool do I need for this? You know, have I harmed somebody? Do I need to make amends? You know, I can remember doing each step and thinking, that ain't bad. But then I remembered it had that tricky one in there where you're going to have to tell all your sins. And I told her my plan. And she laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. And she said, you know, it's kind of like telling God your plan. He gets a lot of laughs out of it too. She had told me I had to have a higher power. I didn't trust nobody. I don't know about y'all, but I didn't trust anyone. Because, you see, I found out that I judge you by me. I don't trust me, so I sure don't trust you. So my first higher power was a van, a car. We called her Vanna White. And to me, she never told my secrets. She never left me stranded, and she always saved me. So Vanna White was the higher power the first year. And we worked through those steps little by little. And when I got to the steps where I was going to have to tell her all my secrets, believe it or not, the ones I swore that I'd go to my grave with, we'd already talked about them. Because, you see, a sponsor is the first person you truly let inside your life. If you think you can get through that book and get a better life without a sponsor, you're going to miss the boat. Because you have to learn to trust someone, and you have to let somebody in. And you have to let somebody in enough for them to know the insides of you, to help you. And my sponsor had gotten behind the wall, and she knew the real Tammy. And when we worked the steps together, she helped the new Tammy come out. Without her, I don't know where I would have been. My life started getting better and better. And it seemed like decisions were getting easier to make, and there was a lot less decisions to make. Because I wasn't doing bad stuff I was trying to get out of. And when you have to tell lies all the time, you don't have a hard time remembering the truth. Yeah, and I all of a sudden realized that I felt like I weighed a lot less because there was less junk to carry. You know, I put off that fourth and fifth step about as long as I could. And you know what? We worked it, and then my sponsor said, okay. I mean, I've cried all day long. I've told her these horrible, horrible things. She's never going to love me again. She's going to call the cops before I get out of here. And I get ready to leave, and she says, okay, sit back down and tell me what you are never going to tell me. Tell me those deep, dark secrets. Oh, I don't. I can wait. When I had finished the fourth and fifth step, I moved to Richmond, Virginia from Oklahoma. And I was told by my sponsor I needed to have a sponsor before I even left. She knew me. She knew. I'd say, oh, I got so-and-so, you know. Nah, she had it figured out. So a friend picked out a sponsor for me before I even got there. When I got to my first meeting to meet my new sponsor, she looked like Jim Cleaver. I swear to God. Pearls, cotton dress. I'm like, oh no, there's no way I do a fifth step with her. She don't even know half the stuff I can talk about. Boy, was I surprised. Judging again. That was a good one of mine. I tend to think that only I do what I do. With that sponsor, I worked on those steps very hard. And I was taught that you do the steps over and over. There's not a one-time thing. Because we keep on living, we keep on sinning, we keep on making mistakes. Today I have a higher power that I feel in every aspect of my life. I have a sponsor that will call and say, okay, why are you not calling me? What have you done? You know, I still make mistakes. But I have a sponsor that I can relate to. I have a sponsor that has a sponsor. Which I think is really cool. Because there's things that she hasn't done that I get into that she can call her sponsor and say, hey, what about you? Today, I work with others. I try very hard to be available because all that's been given to me so freely, I want to be available to give it back. I don't want to be afraid anymore. Today, I'm not afraid of what I told you yesterday. I don't have to worry about what I told my family. You know, why I couldn't come down last time. Oh, yeah, I had surgery. No, all those lies are gone. Today I can tell you the truth. I also found out I don't have to answer you. You know, I don't have to be accountable to everybody. Not everybody's keeping up with every move I make, believe it or not. Today working with others keeps me sober. It also keeps me in the book. Keeps me looking. And I swear sometimes when I look at the big book, there are words in there I didn't see. My sponsor used to say, read the black words, not the white ones. Well, there is no white ones. She said, My point. Today I have an opportunity to live a better life. And today I'm glad to be alive. I don't have to belong to anybody. I don't have to go out and be a part of a crowd. I'm okay just by myself. You know, I'm not going to say I never think of drinking. I've been sober for a long time. But there's still those triggers, you know, and I know what the triggers are today. And today, I don't think about drinking. I think about hurting people sometimes, but I'm not too big about wanting to drink again. You know, I still have sick ways of thinking. But I know today that when I'm thinking wrong, I know it. That's the gift of this program, is I have a meter inside of me that tells me, up, you're off, call your sponsor. Up, you're off, up your meetings. I've been blessed by being in this program. I've been blessed being led by the people that have been in my life. Today I have a wonderful life, and it's better than I ever could have dreamed of. But, you know, I followed a few simple suggestions. I've worked a program over and over and over that makes me feel better, that gives me a life that I couldn't dream of. By working with other females, I feel like I have a real opportunity to be of assistance to God and others. You know, I have to clean up my side of the street and work on it on a daily basis. And I appreciate that you invited me here to share my story. Thank you.